What should he do? Went the question. And the reply was, eat the strawberries. The story had never made any sense to him as a boy. It did now. So he closed his eyes, threw himself into the kiss, and experienced nothing but Sam's lips and the softness of her skin against his, sweet as a wild strawberry.
Come on, Mike, said Chad Mulligan firmly. Please, let's take it outside.
Sam pulled back. She licked her lips and smiled, a smile that nearly reached her eyes.
Not bad. You kiss good for a boy. Okay, go play outside.
Then she turned to Audrey Burton.
But you are still a cunt.
Shadow tossed Sam his car keys. She caught them one-handed. He walked through the bar and stepped outside, followed by Chad Mulligan. A gentle snow had begun to fall, the flakes spinning down into the light of the neon bar sign.
You want to talk about this?
Am I under arrest?
Audrey followed them out onto the sidewalk. She looked as if she were ready to start screaming again.
He killed two men, Chad. The FBI came to my door. He's a psycho. I'll come down to the station with you if you want.
You've caused enough trouble, ma'am. Please, go away.
Chad, did you hear that? He threatened me.
Get back inside, Audrey.
She looked as if she were about to argue. Then she pressed her lips together so hard they went white and went back into the bar.
Would you like to comment on anything she said?
I've never killed anyone.
I believe you. I'm sure we can deal with these allegations easily enough. Probably nothing. I have to do this. You won't give me any trouble, will you, Mike?
No trouble. This is all a mistake.
Exactly. So I figure we ought to head down to my office and sort it all out there.
Am I under arrest?
Nope. Not unless you want to be. I figure we go down to my office together. You come with me out of a sense of civic duty. And we do whatever we can to straighten all this out.
Chad patted Shadow down, found no weapons. They got into Mulligan's car. Again, Shadow sat in the back, looking out through the metal cage. He thought,
SOS. Mayday. Help.
He tried to push Mulligan with his mind, as he'd once pushed a cop in Chicago.
This is your old friend Mike Ainsel. You saved his life. Don't you know how silly this is? Why don't you just drop the whole thing?
I figure it was good to get you out of there. All you needed was some loudmouth deciding that you were Allison McGovern's killer and we'd have had a lynch mob on our hands.
Point.
So you sure there's nothing you want to tell me?
Nope. Nothing to say.
They were silent for the rest of the drive to the Lakeside police offices. The building, Chad said, as they pulled up outside it, actually belonged to the county sheriff's department. The local police had a few rooms in there. Pretty soon the county would build something modern. For now, they had to make do with what they had. They walked inside.
Should I call a lawyer?
You aren't accused of anything. Up to you.
They pushed through some swing doors.
Take a seat over there.
Shadow took a seat on the wooden chair with cigarette burns on the side. He felt stupid and numb. There was a small poster on the notice board beside a large no-smoking sign. Endangered, missing, it said. The photograph was Allison McGovern's. There was a wooden table with old copies of Sports Illustrated and Newsweek on it, with the place on the cover where an address label had been pasted cut neatly away. The light was bad. The paint on the wall was yellow, but it might once have been white. After 10 minutes, Chad brought him a watery cup of vending machine hot chocolate.
What's in the bag?
And it was only then that Shadow realized he was still holding the plastic bag containing the minutes of the Lakeside City Council.
Old book. Your grandfather's picture's in here. Or great-grandfather, maybe.
Yeah?
Shadow flipped through the book until he found the portrait of the town council, and he pointed to the man called Mulligan. Chad chuckled.
If that don't beat all.
Minutes passed, and hours in that room. Shadow read two of the Sports Illustrateds, and he started the Newsweek. From time to time, Chad would come through, checking to see if Shadow needed to use the restroom, once to offer him a ham roll and a small packet of potato chips.
Thanks,
said Shadow, taking them.
Am I under arrest?
Chad sucked the air between his teeth.
Well, we'll know pretty soon. It doesn't look like you came by the name Mike Ainsel legally. On the other hand, you can call yourself whatever you want in this state if it's not for fraudulent purposes. You just hang loose.
Can I make a phone call?
Is it a local call?
Long distance.
It'll save money if I put it on my calling card. Otherwise, you'll just be feeding $10 worth of quarters into that thing in the hall.
Sure,
thought Shadow.
And this way you'll know the number I dialed. And you'll probably be listening in on an extension. That'd be great,
said Shadow. They went into an empty office next to Chad's. The light was slightly better in there. The number Shadow gave Chad to dial for him was that of a funeral home in Cairo, Illinois. Chad dialed it, handed Shadow the receiver.
I'll leave you in here,
he said, and went out. The telephone rang several times, then it was picked up.
Jacqueline Ibis, can I help you?
Hi. Mr. Ibis, this is Mike Ainsel. I helped out there for a few days over Christmas.
A moment's hesitation, then...
Of course. Mike, how are you?
Not great, Mr. Ibis. In a patch of trouble. About to be arrested. Hoping you'd seen my uncle about, or maybe you could get a message to him.
I can certainly ask around. Hold on, Mike, there's someone here who wishes a word with you.
The phone was passed to somebody, and then a smoky female voice said,
Hi, honey. I miss you.
He was certain he'd never heard that voice before, but he knew her. He was sure that he knew her.
Let it go,
the smoky voice whispered in his mind, in a dream.
Let it all go. Who's that girl you were kissing, hon? You trying to make me jealous?
We're just friends. I think she was trying to prove a point. How did you know she kissed me?
I got eyes wherever my folk walk. You take care now, hon.
There was a moment of silence, then Mr. Ibis came back on the line and said,
Mike?
Yes?
There's a problem getting hold of your uncle. He seems to be kind of tied up. But I'll try and get a message to your Aunt Nancy. Best of luck.
The line went dead. Shadow sat down, expecting Chad to return. He sat in the empty office, wishing he had something to distract him. Reluctantly, he picked up the minutes once more, opened it to somewhere in the middle of the book, and began to read. An ordinance prohibiting expectoration on sidewalks and on the floors of public buildings, or throwing thereon tobacco in any form, was introduced and passed 8-4 in December of 1876. Lemmy Hotala was 12 years old and had, it was feared, wandered away in a fit of delirium on December the 13th, 1876, a search being immediately effected but impeded by the snows which are blinding. The council had voted unanimously to send the Hotala family their condolences. The fire at Olson's livery stables the following week was extinguished without any injury or loss of life, human or equine. Shadow scanned the closely printed columns. He found no further mention of Lemmy Hotala. And then, on something slightly more than a whim, he flipped the pages forward to the winter of 1877. He found what he was looking for mentioned as an aside in the January minutes. Jesse Lovett, age not given, a Negro child, had vanished on the night of the 28th of December. It was believed that she might have been abducted by traveling so-called peddlers who were run out of town the previous week, having been discovered to be engaged in certain larcenous acts they were said to be making for St. Paul. Telegrams had been sent to St. Paul, but no results were reported. Condolences were not sent to the Lovett family. Shadow was scanning the minutes of winter 1878 when Chad Mulligan knocked and entered, looking shamefaced, like a child bringing home a bad report card.
Mr. Ainsel, Mike, I'm truly sorry about this. I appreciate how easy you've been about all this. Personally, I like you, but that don't change anything, you know?
Shadow said he knew.
I got no choice in the matter but to place you under arrest for violating your parole.
Then Police Chief Chad Mulligan read Shadow his rights. He filled out some paperwork. He took Shadow's prints. He walked him down the hall to the county jail on the other side of the building. There was a long counter and several doorways on one side of the room, two holding cells, and a doorway on the other. One of the cells was occupied. A man slept on a cement bed under a thin blanket. The other was empty. There was a sleepy-looking woman in a brown uniform behind the counter. watching Jay Leno on a small white portable television. She took the papers from Chad and signed for Shadow. Chad hung around, filled in more papers. The woman came around the counter, patted Shadow down, took all his possessions, wallet, coins, front door key, book, watch, and put them on the counter, then gave him a plastic bag with orange clothes in it and told him to go into the open cell and change into them. He could keep his own underwear and socks. He went in and changed into the orange clothes and the shower footwear. It stank evilly in there. The orange top he pulled over his head had Lumber County Jail written on the back in large black letters.